As students who live, breathe, and amongst other well-being outlets, run, swim, dance, play, draw, and even sing the notes of creative health, London may seem emblematic of a creative health city. However, after a module foregrounding the lived experience of members of the community, coupled with my professional experience working in community investment and engagement in social housing across London, I continue to ask myself, can London, as it exists today, really be called a creative health city? What exactly is a creative health city? Where is London succeeding in its creative approaches to health? And who is being left behind? This podcast comes at a highly significant time in London's relationship to creative health. London Mayor Sadiq Khan has just been voted in for a third term, a political moment that will inevitably have policy and grassroots implications for Londoners. Overall, the evidence is clear that striving for London to be a creative health city must remain an absolute priority. One study within deprived London communities found that out of those engaged with the arts, 82% enjoyed greater well-being, 79% ate more healthily, and 77% engaged in more physical activity. For many guest speakers on the lived experience module, their relationship with healthcare providers was shrouded in misdirection in relation to the provision of healthcare required, feelings of distrust as per the systemic issues in health and social care such as racism, ableism, and sexism, and a general dismay over the lack of empathy and understanding emitted from institutional settings. While there is no universally set definition, for London to be a creative health city, these type of negative experiences cannot be entangled and normalised as being unfortunately weaved amongst all the positive elements both London's health and cultural settings have to offer. Envisioned by sector leaders, practitioners and those with lived experience alike, we must ensure all Londoners can access physical and mental health support via cultural activities. London must champion and develop innovation, creativity, and new approaches to ensuring every Londoner thrives through culture. Equally, health and social care systems must be reassured that the policy frameworks they currently exist within are reimagined to facilitate this, and current conditions are continuously improved. As I come from a social housing background and work closely with statistical data from this sector to inform engagement and investment decisions, it was interesting to learn about the experiences of inequity felt by those on the lived experience module when engaging with mental health services and how this led to them creating cultural spaces to fight against this. Specifically, if we are to achieve a truly creative health city, further acknowledgement needs to be shown to the importance of intersectionality and individual and cultural nuances. Both Daniel Regan, a visual artist and founder of the Arts and Health Hub, a not-for-profit London-based organisation supporting artists and cultural producers exploring health and well-being, and Errol Francis, CEO of Culture And, which is an arts and education charity based in London, which develops programmes that promote diversity across sectors, both gave me understandings of how to inform future work I do within my own sector that has to fight to change the data evidencing that if you're a person of colour, you're much less likely to have a safe or secure home. Regan emphasised the need to think of intersectionality on a deeper level. As we continue to build London as a creative health city, it's important to acknowledge people are not just an ethnicity. And ethnicity does not exclusively represent or be used as a measure of equity to access health and cultural services. Regan, a queer man, an artist, and of both British and Caribbean heritage, emphasised the importance of recognising intersectionality as it also relates to being LGBTQIA+, disabled, financially content, poor, and far more. Francis very clearly detailed the systemic issues creating an intersection of complex inequalities and varied experiences dependent on demographic. Black, African, Caribbean people are seen to have far higher rates of mental illness such as schizophrenia compared to their white counterparts, and significantly more likely to be admitted involuntarily to mental health services via the criminal justice system. Furthermore, Once admitted, evidence shows physical restraint and stronger doses of antipsychotic medication are used upon black people. Simultaneous to this evidence of racial injustice within the healthcare system, black African Caribbean people are more likely to be dismissed when seeking advice and treatment for conditions such as depression, with interventions such as psychotherapy and counselling being less readily available. So, can London as it exists today really be called a creative health city when we have evidence of the above? The precarity of financial and funding sustainability across both sectors and the equity of access to cultural spaces and health services are two defining issues often spoken about that currently negate London being a creative health city. From my experience, something less spoken about is the wider environmental discourse that must be confronted that is ultimately limiting Londoners being granted the space for natural well-being across the city and in places that need it most. Creative Health proposes a transformative, relational approach to health using creative engagement to improve social connection and positive health creation. While not exclusively, many activities related to this excel best in outdoor spaces, in the fresh air. But how fresh is the air we breathe in London, and how may it stop the city being truly a creative health city? The Marmot Review championed access to green spaces as being a contributing factor to reducing inequalities, but this is only within the context of the air in green spaces and via the commute to these spaces being of good quality. Studies have shown that regardless of socioeconomic status, the likelihood of 11 disease categories is 20% greater for those living in areas devoid of sufficient green spaces. This is especially applicable to the inner urban context of London, which we can empirically conclude has lower quantities of green space and also statistically a high proportion of black and minority ethnic communities. Many researchers have drawn a link between this and the correlation of risk of death among those diagnosed with COVID-19 being higher in black, Asian and minority ethnic groups and those living in more deprived areas. A recent report produced by the Greater London Authority and Transport for London evidenced air pollution falling by 49% between 2016 and 2023, with a good proportion of the improvement being a result of ultra-low emission zones known as ULEZ. These were introduced by the Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan. However, conversely, London has also recently been appointed the most exposed city globally to air pollution via aviation, exposing Londoners to the equivalent of 3.23 million cars worth of particulate matter emissions and harmful nitrogen oxides every year. This spectrum of evidence for and against shows a clear disconnect across the environmental landscape of London, which will heavily jeopardise the overall benefits of creative health engagement of green spaces in London. Looking towards the future of London as a creative health city, we have to be collaborative. At an event in November 2023, which was funded, developed and delivered by London Arts and Health, Arts Council England and the Mayor of London, these questions were posed to people who stand at the intersection of health and culture in London. Dr. Paul Gillily of NHS North East London echoed the sentiments of many creative health practitioners, calling the, I quote, need to move away from an ill health service, where we respond to people when they're in ill health, and instead invest in people and invest in their well-being and resilience, so we build a healthier city for our local residents. So, we need to continue to transition away from outdated, traditional, paternalistic approaches to healthcare, and welcome newer participatory models that facilitate a space for healthcare providers and patients to collaborate and co-create on one's individual health goals. Dr. Gillily concluded by resoundingly calling on all of us to, I quote, keep banging the drum. The evidence is already there. We know if we invest in creative health, we get back in the future healthier communities that cost less than an ill health community. We need to bang the drum louder. This podcast has detailed that the foundational pillars of diverse cultural movements and a long-standing healthcare system are clear to be seen in London, and we should look to the future optimistically. However, it is clear that deep systemic issues such as discrimination and environmental concerns must be addressed for London to be a creative health city, not just for our students and the people we have engaged with on the course, but for everyone.